Eddie?
Go.
Okay. This is our quarterly budget summary, and this is the last one of the year. This was for the fourth quarter that ended on August 31st, 07. We had a very good year. Revenues came in, and you have all the detail in your book, and I'll be happy to answer any questions. I'll go through some of the highlights, but then obviously any detailed questions you have, we will certainly try to answer for you. But in summary, if you look in the year-to-date column there, you can see that on the revenue line, the second line down, we had a little over $3 million more revenue than we budgeted or anticipated. About almost $1 million of that is attributed to raw water sales, primarily short-term water sales. We don't really budget for the short-term or one-year water sales because we can't really anticipate exactly what that's going to be. And we had a significant sale of one-year water and other short-term water this year. So that attributed that. And then we also had interest. Our interest income was quite a bit higher than we had anticipated. And that was really, we were pretty conservative in our budgeting as far as the interest rate that we assumed. The rates actually ended up being a little bit higher than we had assumed. And then also our reserve balances. You'll see why we ended up with more money than we thought we were going to end up. And that obviously attributes to higher interest income because you have more money to invest and stuff. So that's really our revenues. Came from. On the expense side, you can see we had about $1,300,000 of less spending than we budgeted. We budgeted almost $29 million, $28,871. We had about $27.5 million. That was really throughout the organization. A lot of that is in salaries and benefits area where we have positions sometimes where people leave, and by the time you refill the position, you end up having savings and stuff. So some of that happens on a year-to-year basis. Also on the project expenditures, the next line, we had about five projects that we have a lot of other capital projects. These are really operating projects that we had planned for and really just didn't get to some of those projects. And in fact, those projects are budgeted in the 08 budget. So we'll get to them. They just were deferred into 08. So the spending really just didn't occur in 07, you can see. Only spent about 10% of that. And then on capital outlay, we're pretty close. That's where we replace vehicles and equipment and do some smaller capital repairs and things like that. And we're pretty much on board. So overall, we had budgeted for a $1.2 million surplus for the year, and we ended up with about a $6.3 million surplus. So you can see the difference is at $5 million. And then on the capital project side, we had budgeted that there's a lot more capital project spending than that, but the $8.4 million represented what we were going to spend out of our reserves, out of the BRA's money, if you will, that we have. We also have other projects that we get reimbursed by customers that are funded out of debt proceeds, bond proceeds, and the like. Grants and things like that. But that's the net. $8.4 million was what the net cost of the projects were going to be. We spent a little more than half that, $4.6 million. And again, there's detail project by project in your book on the capital projects thing, a page there that you could look at. And so underspending. So bottom line is our budget, if you look at the very last line, ending reserves, we had planned for about $26 million of uncommitted. That's our reserves that are really uncommitted. And we ended up with almost $35 million, so about $9 million more in reserves than we had really originally planned. So that's just a summary of it. I'll be happy to answer any particular questions you have on any specific line items or areas, if anybody has any questions about that.
Well, John, I'd say that having been chairman of the Banking and Finance Committee these last 4 years, I've had a mighty easy job with John Hollis.
Right.
He has done such a fabulous job, I just cannot say enough about him. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate it. We just try to make it to where it's understandable and we like I said, we had a good year.
You just expect a 32% increase in the headers every year, too.
Thanks, Pete.
Making budget is real good.
The next item, and let me say, this was the budgetary results pre-audit. And in just a second, the next item on the agenda that I'm introducing is Ben Conley over here with Grant Thornton, and he's gonna kick off. They've already started, in fact, their year-end audit. His group has been out here for 3 weeks, I think, 2 weeks already, and be out here for a couple of more weeks. And they're in the middle of their audit, and so they'll audit all this, and then there'll be some things we book depreciation, and we'll do some other things that'll change some of these numbers a little bit. But this is really the cash results. This is the real economic results for the year of how we did. So, and we'll come back in January, and Ben will talk about it. We'll come back in January, certainly with the CAFR and the final audited financials, and I'll sort of reconcile and talk those results, compare them back to what I just did here. So. Any other questions on it? Okay. Otherwise, I'll go ahead and move to the next agenda item, which is our external audit plan. And again, I'll introduce Ben Conley. Ben's been with Grant Thornton. This is the third year. It's the third year of a five-year agreement that we have with them to do our audit.
Thanks, John. Appreciate it. Good afternoon to everyone. And John, you may help me in terms of where this is actually located within their book. I know I've got the
23,
okay. And you've got, obviously, I've got it on the screen here as well. Just to give you a second to find that. As John mentioned, we are underway, actually, with the external audit. 2 weeks ago on the 15th, we started the A-133, or what we call the single audit work, which really deals with the federal and state grant activity of the authority. And then last Monday, the 22nd, we actually started the financial statement audit. I'm out here today actually doing some review of the A-133 work, and then over the next several weeks, and I'll discuss the timeline in a little bit more detail here in just a second, but over the next several weeks, closing on about November 9th, will be our last day of field work, and then we'll get back with this committee in the January timeframe to present the results of the final audit. Hopefully everybody's had a chance to find it in front of you. I thought a couple things today that I thought were important to cover with the board and the audit committee before we kind of wrap up or finalize the audit are a couple things. One, I wanted to talk about the reports that are going to be issued upon the completion of the audit. Talk a little bit about our estimated fees and hours. Third piece is really the summary of the significant business processes and anticipated audit procedures. Timeline, just to review that briefly, and then have, as we do annually with this group, the fraud discussion. Then certainly I would encourage you to ask questions as we go throughout. Treat it very informally from my perspective. There'll be certainly time at the end to ask questions, but if you want to ask them as I go, feel free to. On page 3, the reports to be issued, really the financial statement audits, there's three components. The retirement plan, I think most everybody in this group was here this morning as we covered last plan year's audit results. This one will be certainly for next year. I mentioned the CAFR, and then the single audit, which I mentioned is the A-133 or the federal and state grant compliance audit. Those three pieces are going to be the same as they were this past fiscal year in terms of the reports that we'll be issuing. We also issue an internal control deficiency letter, and a lot of times there aren't material weaknesses or significant deficiencies per se in the authority's internal controls, but we always try to update the status of any prior comments we've had, as well as to identify any potential control deficiencies we note during the current year audit. So those will really be the four reports will be associated with the authority this next fiscal year. Page 4 is really just a summary by level of effort in terms of estimated hours as well as estimated audit fees and expenses in total for all four of those reports. And then really the next several pages are, and again this isn't at the detailed work program level, but I at least wanted to give the committee and the board an idea of the anticipated audit procedures. We really cover it in three columns. What we characterize as the significant business processes in the far left-hand column, the risk description, kind of the evaluation of materiality, if you will, as well as the risk associated with the potential misstatement of those items. Then on the far right-hand side of the third column is really the anticipated audit procedures. We do a risk-based approach. We certainly focus on what we believe are the more significant, both in terms of financial activity as well as transaction volume. We look at the areas that we believe are the most significant and therefore the most prone to potential misstatement. And then based on that, we perform certain procedures to validate and/or if we find differences. And John had kind of mentioned the budget versus actual comparison. There's certainly one of the things we look at is the budget and kind of the control, if you will, over the budgetary control, as well as the reporting against that on a periodic basis. But there are some differences, as John alluded to, and we certainly focus on those differences, accruals, depreciation, a number of those different things that are going to be different from the results that were just presented. Fortunately, to date, there are no significant audit adjustments. We've got a few things that we're working with Matt to kind of go through and determine if there's any potential audit adjustments, but we're pretty premature in that process considering we have a couple more weeks yet. But I would say so far so good, outstanding cooperation by management to date, and we anticipate that to continue. So that's really kind of an overview on pages 5 through 7 of the procedures that we're performing. Not a whole lot different than what we've done historically, so if anybody has any questions about any of those three pages, I'd be happy to answer them, but that's pretty much in line with the materiality of your operations and the accounts we typically focus on from a risk-based perspective. On page 8, it's really the timeline, and obviously we, during the summertime, before the end of your fiscal year, we really conduct our planning in preliminary analytics and those kinds of things during the July time frame. In the October to November column, obviously we're meeting with the committee today to discuss the planned attack, if you will, on the audit this year, performing our final field work, which again, that's underway and will continue the next several weeks. We do conduct weekly status meetings. I'm out here on a weekly basis with my team, make sure I understand where the work stands, if we have challenges, kind of work through those, and then really just to stay, you know, focused on where we are and ensure that we're making good progress. And then I would say we still need to work through a date here that will work for everybody, but the week of November 5th, probably on the 7th, hopefully, maybe the 8th, somewhere in that time frame, we'd have a closing meeting with management to discuss the results of our audit. If we have any audit adjustments, certainly we'll get their concurrence and agreement on those. And also any control deficiencies or anything we identify as part of the audit, we'd have discussions with them regarding that. Most of those are discussed on a weekly basis as they come up in terms of weekly status meetings, but there'll be a final discussion to make sure that management's in concurrence with everything that we identify, and if we do have internal control deficiencies, that they validate that we did identify one and what their action plans are going to be to address those if applicable. And then December-January time frame, we'll really work through the finalization of the financial statements, and then they will ultimately be distributed to the committee in advance of our presentation. And John and I will work to ensure that we get the date on the calendar once that's set and the time to be back in January with you again to present the results of the audit. Upon your approval, we'll issue the final reports and then certainly the financial statements, A133 CAFR, et cetera, will be distributed to those of interest. And really on page 9 is we've had a number of changes, obviously, in the profession. Certainly a number of them are really related to public company audits, but really what happens on that side, we're not immune to that. And now for the last several years, actually, Statement of Auditing Standards 99 had come out. It really required the auditors. We do a brainstorming discussion within our engagement team to identify with respect to this particular engagement where the risks would lie. And if there's any particular areas of concern we would have, we then expand those discussions to include management. And then certainly today, I wanted to make sure that we had this discussion with the audit committee today regarding fraud. And really, the two bullet point items there on page 9 are really the ones that I'd like to ask you before we wrap up this session of the agenda. And the first one is, anyone aware of any fraud that occurred during the past fiscal year? Anybody aware of any fraud that occurred within the organization past fiscal year ending 8/31? Okay. And then kind of secondly, and I guess as if not more so important in terms of the audit approach, is are there particular areas of concern that the committee has regarding financial operations? Even if you're unaware of any frauds that have occurred, are there any particular areas of concern that you'd like to raise today as discussion items since we're out performing the audit and we'll be for the next several weeks? Anything we need to pay particularly close attention to from your perspective or any particular areas of concern? So with that, I'll open it up for that discussion to see if anybody has any comments or anything that they want to make sure that we address as we go forward on the audit the next several weeks. Yes, Steve.
I just, as a point of clarification, would you
Or do you bring up areas that our internal auditor might concentrate on in the coming year or so to John Hawes that, or to...
Or to Don directly.
Right. Don directly?
You bet. Really what we do, and certainly it's an integrated approach. We obviously are very interested in what Don does throughout the course of the year and any reports that are issued to the audit committee, and then the bearing that that may have, if you will, on the external audit. There's a need for both, if you will. I mean, the internal audit certainly is focused predominantly on policies and procedures compliance. The external audit is really focused on determining whether or not the financial statements that are presented by the authority are materially misstated. But when you look at both of those, certainly what Don does on the internal audit side, it does play in pretty heavily to what we do. The other thing on our side, as we've done now, and I know that it'll be reported to you in January, is we do what we call computer data acquisition analysis, where we take data from the authority's general ledger, detailed transactions, if you will, primarily focused on disbursements and payroll. Because if you look at fraud, most frauds, not only to mention material misstatements, you know, you really have two broad buckets. One is intentionally misstating the financial statements, which for a governmental entity, based on the fact that most people's performance isn't tied to the financial results, that's typically pretty low. But where you do have the potential for material misstatements, certainly material fraud, would rest in the misappropriation of assets category. And if you look at, and I really read a lot of information on this, but certified fraud examiners, they report to the nation, they do every other year, really talks about the most significant risks of material fraud really occurring in the disbursement area, really cash, if you will. And then if you go within cash, three different areas, you certainly have skimming, which means cash ultimately gets taken before it gets deposited into the organization's coffers. And the risk of that on an organization like this is relatively insignificant, not a whole lot of cash changing hands, if you will, in terms of material amounts. Then the second one really deals with larceny or theft, which means it ultimately got deposited into the organization's accounts, but somehow ultimately got thefted out of there through larceny. And the third one, which is really about three-quarters of that 90% of cash kind of misappropriation fraud, really deals with unauthorized disbursements. So a lot of our focus certainly is on that. Don, and the reason I bring that up, Don certainly spends some time looking at those areas as well. And actually, as we go through and generate those reports, we'll test them on a scope basis, but we'll actually provide the disk to Don for him to look at on a more detailed basis. And I think, Don, if the plans are the same, I'm not sure where Don's sitting, if he's in here. There he is. If the plans are the same, Don, I would think probably in the January time frame, as I report the results of the external audit to the committee, that he would probably do something like he's done in past years, which would identify if there are some things. Even if they're relatively immaterial, if you will, in the overall scheme of things, I think the important thing from our perspective is if there are exceptions, even if they're isolated, that he would certainly look through that and understand what the policies and procedures are of the organization to figure out, you know, if there's something that can be done there to strengthen that. I'd say the other thing that we're doing this year, really for the first time in this computer data acquisition process, is looking at P-card activity. And, you know, having worked with a lot of governments, a lot of times you will see some compliance issues associated with that. You know, fortunately, in the ones that I've had problems in that I found, most of them haven't led to a material misstatement of the financial statements. By the same token, working with Don to see if there's any potential weaknesses in that program that could be, you know, breaches of fiduciary responsibility of the organization, to make sure that those are adequately addressed. So that's an area of risk that we typically see in this sector, that if not well controlled can lead to potential embarrassment. So, but no, Steve, we do. It's back and forth. It's us seeing what he's done throughout the course of the year, reading the reports, understand the impact on our audit process, the things we do. We do things, you know, we don't provide absolute assurance. We provide reasonable assurance. We do things on a scope basis. We don't look at every transaction. But the data that we have, certainly we share with Don, and that should ultimately play into his process throughout the course of this next FY as well.
Thank you.
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
I know in banking, John and I know that the cashier and the finance officer and the president, whatever, have to take at least 2 weeks off a year without reporting back to the bank. Do we have anything like that, or is it
Yeah, I'm not aware of any, and I may speak to have John answer the question, not aware of any mandatory two-week vacation requirement, but you're right, we'd certainly see that a lot in our financial institutions practice. The thing that we look at, I mean, the organization would have to determine whether that policy was appropriate or not. What we try to look at is to figure out and ensure there's adequate segregation of duties, and part of that could be that if someone's out on vacation or if they're gone, that there's someone else that's actually performing that responsibility while they're gone. And so, you know, we can't force management to implement something like that, but we certainly talk about the benefits of that kind of a procedure, and more importantly, are people cross-trained to where you can continue to conduct business? Because a lot of times, even if you don't have the mandatory two-week vacation, as long as that job gets performed by somebody in their absence, it would certainly, hopefully, would turn up something. But each organization has to evaluate that. I can tell you, when I started in this profession 22 years ago, it was real common for that to be the case. Now, a lot of people in organizations only get 2 weeks of vacation, and for the organization and tell them what 2 weeks and they need to be successive, it's probably harder to pull off than it used to be. But I think it's a great idea, but I think there's a practical aspect to that. And John, I don't know, unless you guys have implemented something, I'm not aware of that being in place.
Although we have, I mean, we have a significant amount of, you know, there's time that people take off and several days at a time. I would say almost everybody in our group takes off multiple days and sometimes. So
I was just curious as to whether it was a mandatory.
My goal for John is to try to get him to work 2 weeks in a row.
And I didn't say that. That came from Ben Grish. No, those are good questions. Any other questions? Thanks,
right,
everyone.
Man, thank you very much. I appreciate
it. Look forward to the update in January. Thank you.